And again, welcome everybody, and ask Karen to do the full committee roll call, please.
And hey, John, this is Kara. Just very quickly before Karen does the roll call, we do want to inform this full group that CTN is participating in this meeting and is broadcasting it, just so that everyone is aware. And take it away, Karen.
All right, thank you. Tana Handover. Avon.
Larry Burrell here.
Berlin.
Chris Edge here.
Bloomfield.
John Coleman here.
Bolton.
Patrice Carson here.
Canton. East Hartford.
Doug Wilson here.
East Windsor.
Len Norton here.
Ellington.
Tim Webb present.
Enfield.
Donald Nunes here.
Farmington.
Russ Arnold here.
Glastonbury. Granby.
Kirk Severance, and I joined the last meeting a couple minutes late.
Okay, thank you. City of Hartford. Hebron.
Kevin Kelly here.
Manchester.
Jeff Lamalva here.
Mansfield.
John Carrington here.
Marlborough.
Peter Hughes here.
City of New Britain.
Rob Trottier here.
Newington.
Gary Furstenberg here.
Rocky Hill.
Steve Solblack here.
Simsbury.
Tom Roy here.
Somers.
Todd Rowland here.
South Windsor.
Jeff Doolittle here.
Southington. Stafford.
Devin Copperway, good afternoon.
Suffield.
Karen Isherwood's here.
Thank you. Tolland. Vernon.
Dave Smith.
West Hartford.
Greg Summer here.
Wethersfield.
Derek Greger here.
Windsor.
Adam Kessler here.
Windsor Locks. Is there anyone here from GHTD?
Yes, Mary Duffy.
Thank you. Is there anyone here from any other organizations?
Neil Pay from Canton is here, sorry.
Jennifer Carrier, Federal Highway Administration.
Grayson Wright, CTDOT. Okay.
Chuck Harlow with Fussin O'Neill.
I'm sorry, could you repeat your first name?
Chuck Harlow.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Gary Haynes from East Granby.
Oh, thank you.
Jen Rodriguez from Windsor Locks, just joining now.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
Jim Culpa of VHB.
Casey Harden, Trans Systems.
Kevin Burnham, Connecticut DOT.
Gary Jarrell from Cardinal Engineering.
All yours, John.
Thank you, Karen. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you all for joining. Welcome to the committee meeting. We have three new members. I think I know one has indicated they're on. Steve Sopolak from Rocky Hill. Welcome. Welcome to the group.
Thank you.
Also, I understand Nat Gale from Hartford is going to be joining us. I don't think he's on yet. And Dave Cochran from Tallinn. If you are on, welcome. If not, we look forward to either having you join later or at the next meeting. Move on to public forum. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to address the committee? Hearing none, seeing no chats, we'll move on to adoption of the minutes of the meeting that was held on July 26, 2021, and I'd entertain a motion to so do.
Motion to approve, Tom Roy.
Thank you, Tom.
Second, Patrice Carson.
Any corrections, deletions, additions?
I have one correction. Kevin Kelly was present at the last meeting.
Thank you, Kevin. Hearing no other comments, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And now one at a time, abstentions.
Rocky Hill.
Ellington. Donald Nunes, Enfield, abstains.
Gary Haynes, East Granby, abstains.
Chris Edge, Berlin, abstains.
Todd Rollins, Summers, abstains.
Any others? Thank you. The minutes are approved. Move on to staff reports. Roger, you're going to do 60 seconds for safety.
Yes. Good morning, everybody, or afternoon. I have two items to just highlight. They were in your package. One is tomorrow. UConn's T2 Center is hosting a Zoom meeting starting at 11 o'clock that explains the new legislation that allows municipalities to establish speed limits on local roads. So their Office of State Traffic Administration will explain the new laws regarding setting speed limits. You might be interested in that. And then also, I just had included in the packet, just as a reminder, I had mentioned before, two new laws that will go into effect October 1st. One, the crosswalk, pedestrian crosswalk law that now requires drivers to yield for a pedestrian in a crosswalk if they indicate an intent to cross by raising a hand or an extension like a cane or something into the crosswalk. So that's one. And then the other one is the new dooring law that makes it illegal to open a door and cause contact with a vehicle if the door is open longer than expected, than it should be, and that sort of thing. So just wanted to highlight those new pedestrian safety laws. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger. Terry, the Tim Field Guide.
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. I'm very pleased to announce that the Tim Coalition set up a workforce to develop a traffic incident management scene management guide. It is completed and it was delivered, and we are working out delivery to everybody that would want to need. Also, I've developed an evaluation form that we're going to be handing out with the field guide for feedback on things that maybe we can improve upon or change. So I'm excited for this. It's a long time coming, and hopefully we can get it out to any interested towns and emergency responders. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Any questions? Moving along, Kara, the state rail plan.
Thanks, Don. We just wanted to bring to everyone's attention that the DOT is in the process of updating the state rail plan. They did have some public meetings earlier in the month, but they have live a virtual room with all the information about the plan and opportunities for feedback. They are currently running a survey, which will be open until October 15th for anyone who wants to make comments that about things about rail that should be considered. And I will put a link to that survey in the chat.
Thank you, Kara. Any questions? Okay, Ryan's the CT Rides quarterly report.
Thanks, John. I'll be going over the highlights from the recent quarterly report. The Along the Lines podcast series, hosted by Rich Angeski, who's the Bureau Chief of Public Transportation at CONDOT, continued to run. Episodes in the quarter cover topics ranging from biking and essential travel, the future of rail travel in Connecticut, and trends in ridership. The Connecticut in Motion webinar series developed a partnership with the Harvard Business Journal, released two episodes in the quarter. These covered the impacts of COVID-19 on public transit and also COVID-19's impacts on workplace trends. Both these webinars had over 200 attendees. The CT Rides team collaborated with DOT and DEEP to promote the free weekend and holiday bus service to state parks and beaches this summer. program is called Park Connect. They develop marketing materials and bus wraps for the program. CT Rides also helped to develop marketing materials for the fare-free weekend bus service program that took place over the summer called Weekend Wheels. And preparation for the new school year, updates to marketing materials are made to the Rhodes Scholar Program to help explain the UPass program to college students. This included new posters and social media content. In terms of website updates for the quarter, they created a new news page and also an alerts panel banner that's on the top of the website to help market the Connecticut in Motion webinar series and also the Along the Lines podcast. Over the course of the quarter, the CT Rides outreach team held 175 events, and now total participating organizations is at 314. And lastly, they launched their 2021 Return to Work survey in June, and they sent over 5,000 survey responses. And those are the highlights from the quarter.
Thanks, Ryan. Any questions? Moving right along, Rob, MPO certification review. Is this biannual or annual? Hello?
Hey, Rob, you're on mute.
Oh, sorry. This is every 4 years, although we had one. So this one we had actually 3.5 years ago.
Okay.
But this is our, right now, the FHWA and FTA are performing a desktop review on many of our documents or required documents and some of our other work outputs. And they have indicated that it'll be likely that one of the on-site days for the interview will be October 25th. So that, as usual, we'll probably integrate our transportation committee into that process of the agenda that day for the full cert review. Basically, as I said, every 4 years, the feds review our work efforts at CROG. And this one is likely, it's usually a one full day event or two half days. And we usually have our transportation committee included in the agenda item. So look forward to that for the next transportation committee meeting. We don't have a time yet for the transportation committee meeting because it's likely going to be integrated into that agenda.
Okay, is that going to be Zoom or in person?
It will be on Zoom.
Okay. Rob, you and Satori on the lots of project solicitation and coordination update.
Sure, I'll start off. Thank you, John. So this is in regards to the 2022 lots of project solicitation. I had mentioned at the subcommittee meeting that a request for proposals RFP is anticipated to be distributed at the end of the month in September. So the projects will be due in January and there'll be a date for those, and selection approval is anticipated in May of 2022. So in the selection policy that we had approved in July, the pavement structural improvement will be rated as to the appropriateness of the treatment. So we've worked closely with CONDOT, and Rob will add information in just a few minutes. And we looked at longstanding inefficiencies in the guidelines in regards to pavement. So as a result, to assist the municipalities with the pavement treatment and categorization, CROG will be offering a voluntary pre-application pavement treatment opinion. And this will be from a pavement expert pre-vetted by CONDOT, and this will be free to our communities. So we're working out the details and with CONDOT and our consultants, and we'll have more detailed information at next month's meeting. So we'd like to coincide that information with CONDOT and their revised lots of guidelines that will be distributed at the end of the month.
And following up on the next item, CONDOT lots of coordination update. Basically, as Satoria mentioned, CONDOT is updating their lots of guidelines. And that, in combination with much of the town feedback we've had at recent meetings, has prompted us to, you know, meet with many of the CONDOT units to discuss efficiencies and or inefficiencies, efficiencies in the LOTSIP process. I think we've made some good progress with many of the units, including pavement. Satoria mentioned a 15-year service life is still going to be available for some projects. We also, as she mentioned, the expert pavement consultant that we're going to offer to our towns was agreed to with CONDOT. We've also made some progress with the right-of-way unit, and we're meeting with traffic tomorrow to nail down some procedural issues, especially with how things get through traffic and what units review those. So some of that progress is documented here. We have two major issues that can't be addressed at the staff level. And those are listed at the bottom of the memo. One is eligibility of non-federal aid roadways. This is potentially problematic to address, as there has been an agreement for us to swap STP Urban and LOTSIP authorities. And it might be risky to pursue that. And I think the feeling I'm getting is that it might be ill-advised to go down that route with legislators. The second is elimination of CONDOT oversight. There is a potential that we could ask for this to do it on a pilot basis for just this region, but we can't really speak for other regions. It would be a lift as far as responsibilities and work efforts go for the region. So right now we're looking into what kind of staffing that would require, what kind of responsibilities, what kind of guidelines could be done. And following that, I think we can make a determination whether we want to go with that ask to CONDOT with kind of things better outlined. And as it would take more staff and everything, it might even be wise for us to run that by any new executive director. But that's the path we're going down, at least looking into how that might look or how that would look if we were to take over that responsibility. So if there's any questions.
I'll start.
Go ahead, Peter.
Again, I, as John said at the previous meeting, cannot thank you guys enough and the effort you're putting through. But Rob, we sat here a year ago when they promised to meet with you on quarterly meetings, and that was the commissioner, and that hasn't happened.
They have.
You know, we sat and he said they would meet quarterly with you because we were their main lots of customer. That just hasn't happened. You know, we can meet with these, and the idea that they're in sole control. This is state money, not federal money. Why would our legislators cut off money to us that is the most valuable program as far as infrastructure on a local level? I think we just concede to DOT way too much here. It's time to put some legislative pressure on the process. Maybe we don't change the law, but somebody's got to get the can moving. I feel bad for the change we're going to make. How long is it going to take the contract to be approved for Stafford? 4, 6, 8 weeks, and then they're going to miss the whole winter season they wanted to get work done in. I mean, they just are. You meet with them, and again, this is nothing about you guys. This is all on them. You guys are doing everything you can, and then we just go back to the full circle where we started. And I think, you know, we are the biggest region. How many state senators and reps do we have? It's time for them to start talking to DOT about process and moving along. Have they given you a flow chart of how, what department LOTSIP sends these things to on the different kind of projects so you get an idea, or we can get an idea of the flow that we go through?
They don't have an official flow chart. We do know the process. Like I said, we're meeting with traffic tomorrow to iron that out a little more. But no, we don't have a flow chart.
I mean, maybe you could ask them to present one, so at least we can understand the complexity of their internal reviews, which is always their answer to us.
I just want to go back on the contract with Stafford. I did call them and talk to CONDOT in regards to the issue on whether, you know, if this was approved and going forward, they said that they would expedite it and make sure that the authorization to award is issued shortly. So I did try to get that going, Peter, in advance, just so, because I know sometimes there are delays, but they did agree to that. So they will definitely get that out sooner rather than later, so that Stafford doesn't have to wait for the contract. So they are responsive if we reach out to them.
Peter, let me respond. I mean, clearly your frustration is very evident, and I'm guaranteed that frustration is shared by almost, if not every municipality in the region that's had to deal with the LOTSA process. And I think that I would make a couple of comments to that. One, I think we decided that that it would be appropriate to see how far and how effective our very capable staff could be in meeting with representatives of CONDOT to see if we could make some improvements in the process. And I recognize that there are representatives of both CONDOT and FHWA on this meeting. And I'm sure that, you know, they're hearing what we're saying. And after that process was completed, I think we decided at that point we would make the decision as to what we wanted to do next if we were not satisfied with the progress that the staff was able to make. My concern, one, is I'll come back to that in a minute. My additional concern is that I think the issues are going to be compounded by two things that I mentioned in the prior meeting. One is the staffing cliff that's going to occur with the retirement at CONDOT and elsewhere throughout state of Connecticut employment. And two, the arrival, which has already started, of the billions of dollars of COVID money, infrastructure money, which we know the department is going to be pressured exceedingly hard to implement quickly. And my fear is that lots up with reduced staffing and that pressure is really going to get lost in the mix. With all that said, I think that we should focus on whether or not how we can improve that process for us and really getting to the point where we could be a pilot to monitor and manage the program on our own for this region. That said, before we go in and ask to do that, we got to be damn sure we can do it. And so that is what the staff is now doing in terms of putting in place a plan that would look at what additional staffing and or consultant assistance CROG would need to properly manage the LOTSA project. And I think once that's in place, then from my opinion, I think then we should make a very significant push with both the senior management at CONDOT and with our legislators to see whether or not we can put in place a pilot regional oversight program here in the Capital Region. And if that requires legislation, then we go and get that in this coming session. One would hope it does not. And one would hope that those at CONDOT and FHWA that are listening would be cognizant of the concerns that we have here and the desire that we have and the ability that we have to undertake this program on our own and improve its even further than what it is now. Any other comments?
I would just add, John, I think the two things that DOT is always going to hang on, and if we can get to that point where we can have some oversight, is they need to determine eligibility because of the STB urban factor. We already have reviews by third-party engineers. They're just doubling the review and adding things out of the blue. And then, my concern is how long it takes from the time we get a bid approved till we get an award letter. And I'm glad Stratford's going to be expedited, and hopefully expedition is in a month. But there are things they can do internally that they just don't do. And, you know, again, our staff, I agree with you. They've done everything. They meet. And again, we're always in the same place. And I agree with you. Once this federal money comes in for these other projects, where are we going to be?
Thank you, Peter. We hear you. Any other comments? All right, we'll stay on top of it. Hopefully at the next meeting, we'll be able to report back additional project progress that the staff has made at the staff level. And also hopefully they'll have in place a preliminary plan for moving forward if we, for our own internal staffing and if we're gonna undertake it ourselves. Other staff reports, Tim, the Recreational Trails Grant Program.
Yes, thank you. So the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection is now accepting proposals for Connecticut's Recreational Trails Program. These applications are due November 1st, and funds from this program can be used for planning and design of trails, construction, maintenance and restoration of existing trails, access to trails by persons with disabilities, purchase and lease of trail construction and maintenance equipment, acquisition of land or easements for a trail, and operation of educational programs to promote safety and environmental protection related to recreational trails. This year, there's $3 million worth of funding. Award sizes vary. The examples that they show go from $47,000 up to $300,000 to give you kind of an idea of the range. And they can fund up to 80% of a project. Again, the applications are due November 1st, and I've posted this in the news section of our website, so it's right on the front page, so you can get a link directly to the press release and the webpage that has the application. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Tim. Any questions? Moving on, Rob, you have some exciting announcements.
Yes, we have some new staff. So I want everybody to welcome Maureen Goulet, Principal Project Program Manager, actually, to CROG. She's going to be overseeing our Brownfields program and other important activities. You might recognize her name. She was at CROG before. So welcome, Maureen. And also Norelle Ferguson, who is our planning intern. She will be here for the whole UConn semester. Or two semesters, the whole year. And so welcome, Norelle. She's in the planning department also. So as a planning intern.
Well, Maureen, welcome back if you're on the call. And Norelle, we look forward to your spending your year with us. I'm sure you'll find it interesting. All right, moving on. Rob, still you, the TIP amendment in Enfield?
Yeah, this is a high priority project, which is shorthand for an earmark, or longhand for an earmark. This was an earmark that Enfield had, a federal earmark. They wish to cancel the project in favor of the no-build alternative. Now, this just cancels this project, does not cancel the earmark. So the earmark is still available if they find a project that they think is more doable. There were issues engineering wise and otherwise with this project, and so they wish to cancel it. And the earmark, as I said, remains available if they do find a better solution for this same purpose, or to be repurposed in the future if that becomes available through Congress.
Thanks, Rob. Any comments from Enfield?
No, sir.
Thank you. Okay. Any questions? I'd entertain a motion to approve the TIP amendment.
Patrice Carson, so moved.
Thanks, Patrice. Is there a second?
Dave Smith, second.
Thank you, Dave.
I did have a question, John. How long is the earmark good for? Forever?
And forever for now until
okay.
Once in a while there's a rescission.
Okay.
And that comes out of the blue, an announcement of rescission, and then there'll be an end date and they will have to spend it by that time frame if that happens.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? And it's unanimous, Karen. And now we'll move on to the lots of funding increase and scope modification for the Stafford Road Bridge. So, Toria?
Thank you. So we discussed this at the cost committee meeting, so I'm going to reiterate some of the items. The town of Stafford's requesting a funding increase of $1,198,468, and it's from the $2.6 million to $3.799 million. It's about a 46% increase, and it's based on a competitive low bid. The town has completed its lots of design, and it was issued their authorization to advertise letter on August 5th. It went out and held its public bid opening on September 8th, and they received five bid packages ranging from 3.4 to 5.7 million, considerably higher as indicated than the engineer's estimate of 2.6. So there were some disparities that we discussed in the subcommittee. There's a lot of risk associated with this project because the bridge is on top of an existing dam. And so there were many issues associated with minimizing the vibration to ensure there was no damage to the dam. They were also, contractors were also concerned about the lowering the impoundments and cofferdams required to complete the project. And there were, they also saw some considerably higher price increases across the board due to supply chain and labor shortages, and also the risk associated with constructing this project. So this was recommended for approval in the cost subcommittee meeting. There was discussion at the meeting on whether the options were discussed to reduce costs, and those were discussed with the contractors. So this, the recommendation is to allow the town to accept the lowest responsible bidder with costs that are substantially higher due to the complexity of the project and increased price increase. Staff did recommend, and the subcommittee recommended, committee approval of an additional $1,198,468 of lots of funding for the Stafford Leonard Road Bridge project.
Thank you, Satoria. Stafford, want to make some remarks?
Sure. Thanks again, Satoria. You know, as we talked about in the subcommittee, this is a project that Stafford has been working on for quite some time now. We're excited to see the project move forward for the residents of Stafford. Unfortunately, we were quite surprised when we saw how high the bids were when we opened them. We've discussed the pricing and concerns with the contractors. We had conversations with contractors that bid, some contractors that picked up plans but didn't submit a package. As Satoria noted, it's a complex project. The contractors have concerns regarding the risks involved. And this appears to be a primary cause for the increased unit pricing. Likewise, we've seen an increase in materials and services across the board since the beginning of the pandemic. And I'm sure this is also contributing to the increased costs. Again, Gary from Cardinal Engineering is on the call to answer any engineering questions the committee might have. And I'll also answer any questions the committee would have. Thank you.
Thank you, Devin. Any questions, comments?
Move approval.
Motion to approve has been made. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Who seconded, John? I'm sorry.
Stephen Sopolak.
Thank you.
Any of opposition? Any abstentions? Karen, it's unanimous. Good luck, Stafford. I hope it works out.
Thanks, John. Thanks, everybody.
Mike, item number 7, the resolution on the bike share feasibility update.
Yep, thank you, John. Yep. So we're looking to update and build upon our original 2014 bike share feasibility study by looking at trends, new technology, identifying a successful business model, The CROG policy board has authorized up to $50,000 from the RSG or CROG's regional fund to commission this study. CROG recently conducted a qualifications-based selection process in which Foursquare ITP was found to be the most qualified firm to assist us in, developing this bike share feasibility study update. Today, we are looking for the Transportation Committee's endorsement to allow us to enter into a contract with Foursquare ITP. And then we'll look to have that approved at this month's policy board later this week. And if you guys have any questions, just let me know.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions? I'd entertain a motion to approve the resolution.
Patrice Carson, so moved.
Thank you, Patrice.
Chris Edge, second.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, yes.
All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? It's also unanimous, Karen. Moving on to item number 8, which is a presentation on the Greater Hartford Mobility Study. Welcome, Casey Harden.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. I'm just going to share my screen here. There we go. Okay. So we had previously presented to the committee, and I have Kevin Burnham, who's the project engineer from DOT, with me as well. But it was actually last January we did a little bit of an intro to the project. We were just getting going at that point. So we've now kind of been through our existing conditions analysis phase and felt like it would be the time to come back to the committee, give an update. And then we also are asking for some help in terms of how we can better reach into some of the communities outside Hartford. And, you know, Hartford, we've had particular success with the NRZs and kind of some of the various organized groups. And so we're interested in, you know, whether there's the ability to tap into that in any of the kind of surrounding communities. So in terms of our study process, we're kind of in a transition between what we're calling phase one and phase two, where phase one identified the existing conditions analysis and current deficiencies, created a list of mobility needs and identified a wide range of projects that can that will address those. And we're kind of finalizing our fatal flaw screening to determine which of those potential projects or alternatives get moved into phase two, which will be commencing this fall and kind of lasting through 2022. So again, today I'll be summarizing that existing conditions analysis and you know, giving you a high level overview of what is contained in that range of alternatives. And we'll be posting a lot more information on the study website and starting to build out some focus groups, some of which, particularly those that you know, affect various municipalities, we'll likely be following up with some of the folks on this call. So we conducted our existing conditions assessment on a mode-by-mode basis, kind of looking at, you know, everything from traffic and highway through active transportation. So we sought to kind of look at the ties between the different modes as well and kind of creating different intermodal connections. And essentially, we looked at the existing infrastructure, what its current status was, how the system operates, and where are the gaps and where are there any kind of safety concerns. And we put together a series of SWOT tables, that's the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats for each of the modes. And just to summarize, we have this big report that I'm consolidating into like 4 slides. I'm not gonna touch on everything. I'm gonna try and give a little bit of a flavor of what we looked at, but the report itself will soon be posted on our website as well as disseminated through various media content, including some fact sheets and informative videos. Starting with traffic, and this probably won't come as a big surprise, but in particular, the fact, so we looked at 2019 as our kind of base year for traffic analysis, but we also did a bit of a comparison to what we were seeing in 2020. But, you know, big picture, the majority of the congestion in the region is generated by commuting. A lot of it centered around the I-84 and 91 interchange right in downtown Hartford. We did see, we used the streetlight platform to conduct origin destination analysis. And so we looked kind of all around the study area. And let me just kind of describe this map for a second. So our study area starts, of course, in the core of Hartford and East Hartford, and then goes about one town outside that study core around the area. And it does extend up to the north to include Bradley. So we sort of subdivided around sort of slices of a pie, if you will, and looked at origin destination patterns within each of those areas. And we found in every single area, the predominant set of trips was occurring within the respective sub-region. So, you know, we do see that there is potential for mode shift across the region. You know, there's, you know, such a car-centric study area, but, you know, even kind of small percentages should help ease some of the burden, help kind of increase the livability of some of these communities. And kind of finally, there's a lot of areas around the study area that lack redundancy and sort of, you know, channel heavy volumes through specific corridors, whether that be the freeway network or some of the arterial systems. So looking to ease redundancy is a big thing on the list, including river crossings. And then at the western edge, the Metacomet Ridge is a real kind of geographic boundary. In terms of the kind of geometry deficiencies in the highway network, 84 and 91 both have some substandard and kind of older design features. I don't expect you to be able to read those. Those are crash bar charts for I-84, but I'm just putting them in there. Just you can really see the bump in crashes within the kind of urban core of Hartford and East Hartford. And these are normalized for exposure. So the segment length and the traffic volume are factored in. You can really see the spike. And, you know, that's, you know, really created by a series of, whether it's horizontal curvature, ramp spacing, just a lot of stuff going on in a short period. And most of it doesn't meet current design standards. And there's several pieces of deficient infrastructure, including at the 8491 interchange, as well as the I-84 viaduct through Hartford. In terms of our bus transit analysis, we did a lot of, this is an example of an isochrome map, and that looks at essentially transit travel time from a given a point. So this in particular is looking at the Dayhill Road, Bradley, employment center in kind of northern Bloomfield and western Windsor, and kind of shows how far you can get on transit within a certain period of time. And so we've identified that about 150,000 jobs in the study area can be reached within 20 minutes of housing areas of high transit need based on demographics. That sounds kind of good, but there's actually about 550,000 jobs in the study area. So we are looking at how we can better connect those areas of high transit need with high areas of employment.
Kendra, what's going on?
And a lot of the employment centers have lower frequencies of service and spans of service that can make it hard, particularly for those that don't work a traditional 9-to-5 shift, can make it hard and make transit difficult to get to where they need to go. And then the kind of last piece of the bus transit analysis, you know, showed us that, you know, in order to drive ridership, we really need to make transit more reliable and competitive. And ultimately, we're going to be working with Prague, who's conducting this transit priority corridor study right now of five different routes around the Hartford division, and trying to see what we can build off of that throughout the region to kind of improve reliability and travel time competitiveness. From a rail perspective, it certainly was the mode most affected by the pandemic in terms of ridership, and we're seeing the service come back online, hoping that trend continues back towards where it was headed. We know the aging equipment that's used in the Hartford line is a concern. Condot is actively working on procuring new equipment to run the Hartford line. And then there are infrastructure issues, in particular at the Hartford Rail Viaduct at Union Station and the Connecticut River Bridge between Windsor Locks and Enfield, where the old infrastructure can't support certain train weights, can't support certain speeds, only one track is open, and all that contributes to kind of limit the level of service that's able to be provided north of Hartford. So kind of looking to make sure that those major infrastructure projects are fit into a broader implementation plan. And then finally, looking at TOD opportunities, there's been some exciting stuff starting to happen around the region, both with CT Fast Track in Newington and the rail line up in Windsor Locks. So just trying to make sure that from a transportation perspective, that the right projects are kind of in the pipeline to support that type of development. And then finally, kind of keeping our eye on the big picture. You know, there's been a lot of stuff in the news and the media about between Hartford and Boston, Hartford, New York, New Haven and Boston, and just making sure that the study area is really well positioned to be a key component for the regional rail network. And then sort of the last of these slides on active transportation, walking and biking in particular, you know, probably not a big surprise, you know, based on demographic info, downtown Hartford is sort of the highest from a demand perspective. And I should say that, you know, when we looked at the active transportation network, we kind of set up this sub area of five communities based on their distance to the downtown core. And seeing within them that sidewalks are generally fairly well placed. We do see some gaps in the sidewalk network around the transit network. But generally speaking, at least in terms of, you know, when compared with bicycle infrastructure, it is kind of doing a better job of meeting those connections. And we do see a need to focus on last mile connections. So there's a lot of transit routes. You know, Dayhill Road is an example that don't have sidewalk that connects stops to key areas of employment or housing. So one of the big focuses we're going to look at is kind of tying those things together, transit and last mile connections. So how did we, so this is just sort of a process slide that shows how we took what we've identified in terms of deficiencies and kind of system weaknesses, identified a specific subset of needs through our assessment and then pulling upon, there's been a lot of planning work done within the region over the last 5 to 10 years. So borrowing from previously completed reports. And then of course, from the public as well, we had over 220 comments on our public portal. So kind of factoring all those in and making sure that we address them. And so what we've done is put together a range of alternatives, and that includes capital. So, you know, building specific things, looking at operations, in particular, bus and rail, how can those services operate in a manner that is more competitive and, you know, can help drive a bit of mode shift. And then from a policy perspective, you know, whether it's looking at parking, whether it's looking at funding, you know, how can these organizations, be it PROD, be it DOT, be it the towns themselves, you know, via, say, complete streets policies, how can we kind of drive mobility improvements from that perspective? And then finally, we're also looking at frame of action. There's a real desire from the department to see some actual improvements come from this, in particular with the potential impending stimulus program. You know, can we, you know, make sure that the department, that the region is really well positioned to, you know, be competitive for that funding when it comes through and be ready to jump on various key projects. Just as a sort of an example, I mean, we're looking at everything from, you know, how do you replace the 8491 interchange to some of these big rail investments that I mentioned, but there's also been a lot more local stuff that's come through, especially the public comments. So, you know, I think over the next two months or so, we'll be forming some working groups, and we'll be reaching out to some of the municipalities here within our study area about kind of discussing some of these smaller scale things and, you know, how they want to involve with us and with potential focus groups that meet over the next year or so discussing specific improvement types. Kind of, you know, pivoting to the final couple slides here, we've been pretty active on our outreach program. We did start going out and meeting people in person, especially with our pop-up events. We've been publishing on our website a little dashboard of different things we've been doing. So, you know, over the last couple months of the summer, that included a variety of of stakeholder outreach events with CRDA, Hartford Young Professionals, Middlesex Chamber of Commerce, kind of summarizing what's been going on our website and social media outreach. And then, like I said, really trying to get out with some of the organized groups that are in Hartford. So that's all the NRZs. And then utilizing media where we can. We did a public service announcement on WQTQ. We did an interview on WDRC, and then we posted something on Access TV in Hartford. So we're trying to kind of do whatever we can to kind of make sure the message is out there. And that'll be maybe one thing I can pause as I get to this slide, which is, you know, we want to understand who we aren't reaching. We've, in addition to all the online stuff, we did a big flyering of bus shelters in and around Hartford and other public sites in Hartford. And then we also are just getting a series of flyers onto the CT Transit Hartford Division buses. But we understand, you know, a lot of our efforts are concentrated in and around Hartford. In some ways it's easier for us because they have the organized network. So, and you don't all have to answer right now, but we are interested in any kind of advice or feedback about how we can kind of better reach some of the communities outside the center. So that's, you know, West Hartford, Newington, Rocky Hill, Glastonbury, East Hartford, Manchester, Windsor Locks, Bloomfield. So, you know, if anyone happens to have any ideas or wants to, you know, throw something out, you know, feel free to jump in right now, or we can, you know, make sure that as Krog follows up in the meeting, that we kind of put something out there to get some input.
Yeah, we'll want to get a copy of that. All right, which one do you guys
have? That complete your presentation, Casey?
Yeah, just one slide on next steps. So we are going to publish this existing conditions report in the next couple of weeks. We're just addressing some minor comments from the department. That'll go up on the website. We've submitted our needs statement for review, and we'll be following that up with a universe of alternatives tech memo. All these will work their way through Krog and up onto the website as well. So they'll be available. And then we're working on disseminating this technical analysis we've done out to the public via a series of fact sheets and videos. So I think that's it for the presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you, George. Here, keep it all together though. All right. And then just put it on Craigslist.
Comments, questions? I for one would suggest, in terms of talking, I mean, I would talk to some of the big, you know, commercial realtor organizations. I would talk to some of them individually, some of the larger employers. When we did this many, many years ago on a much different scale, some of the major employers were very, very useful. You'd be surprised how much they do think about travel patterns of their employees and their ability to get out. That may be less of an issue now in terms of commute patterns changing and work at home changing, but I would certainly talk to major employers both within the city and in the suburbs. I would talk to the to representatives of the trucking industry. They're a major user. I would talk to, in the suburbs, I think, you know, the rotaries and small chambers, maybe even presentations to the town councils. Or economic development commissions would begin to get you some feedback in terms of interest. I think the League of Women Voters is a marvelous organization in terms of reaching out to people in terms of both their forums and otherwise, and you may want to see if you can use that avenue. That's just some thoughts that come to mind.
No, thank you for those. We have been pretty good with the employers. We met with a host of those and the trucking industry, but that's some good feedback on the commercial realtor organizations. And then, we got an invitation from the Weathersfield Economic Development Commission. So we're going down there next month. But I think a broader range of those might be very useful. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other suggestions from anybody? Hearing none, Casey, thanks very much. Good luck. We look forward to the next presentation and to where it takes you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your time.
Thanks. Any other business to come before the committee?
Mr. Chair, if you'd entertain a comment from a guest.
Hey. Mr. Impresario.
There we go. Just a quick update. Working with University of Connecticut Department of Public Policy on a Hartford-Boston rail webinar, probably November. As you recall, that's a $6 to $8 billion project that would link basically hourly rail service from Hartford to Boston. Over 30 years, it produced $60 to $80 billion worth of economic benefit, which is pretty amazing. So we're doing a webinar on that probably mid-November before the holidays. We'll look at the report that AECOM did for us, and we're just finishing up a critique of the ridership study that the East-West Rail folks did in Massachusetts. So just to give you a heads up that we're doing that, we have this week a webinar on the youth auto theft issue we're doing with UConn. We have 244 people. Usually we have like 70. Well, this one has pushed a button. So anyway, I just want to let you know about that, and I want to keep the Transportation Committee apprised of the Hartford, Boston, Springfield, Boston rail connection. And the stars may be aligning in terms of the political leadership and of funding. But anyway, if there are any questions, I'd be happy to respond to them offline, but just wanted to say hello.
Welcome and hello back.
Yep.
Any questions of Lyle? Any other business? I will then entertain a motion to adjourn, and we will meet again in October.
So moved.
Second, Chris Edge.
Thank you, Chris. Motion made and seconded to adjourn. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? Thank you all. Be well, be safe, and we'll see you in October. Thank you, staff.